I think we should talk a little bit now. If are you happy to go on for a bit longer? And if you think of other stuff about your childhood, because it's been really good, hasn't it? Really good recollection.
Really
it has, because it's just that's exactly what oral history is. It's just these little tiny details, that, and you start building up a picture then, and it's and you're very good at pictures. But I just wanted to ask you really a little bit about you. About, I mean, when you came back. So first of all, I mean, you must have missed it, and your life completely changed when you came
back. Yes, home. My life was rather a mess actually when I came back. I don't know why my parents were very involved in the convent in all sorts of ways, and Dad helped out and organised work parties and things like that. So we were very well known, and I had a lot of friends in Gibraltar. And for some reason, which I don't really understand, my parents got posted home, and they decided that I had to come with them. But it was the year I was to do my O-levels. So I came back to England and went to Chatham Grammar, and was regarded as very stupid, which, you know, I wasn't brilliant, but I wasn't clever. And whereas in Gibraltar I was going to do, I think, 10 O-levels, I couldn't do Spanish there. The maths was all different. The Shakespeare set books were all different. The Latin set books were all different. And so I was regarded as rather stupid. And that was really difficult. And I absolutely hated the school. So I got enough O-levels to go nursing. But I had to have human biology, because the nuns didn't teach human biology, because it wasn't very nice, which I thought was lovely. But typical nun, really, isn't it? So I had to stay on in the lower six to do human biology, and then I left. I went on a pre-nursing course at a convalescent home before I went to London. But that was a rough 2 years, and I really didn't enjoy it at all.
Well, it must have been tough, because, I mean, apart from anything else, I mean, your friends, the climate, your life, completely
absolutely
different.
And then to be thought really stupid, and the English teacher would make fun of me in front of the class. It was bullying, actually, when I look back now. And you know, it wasn't very helpful. And the headmistress said, what are you going to do? What do you plan to do when you leave school? And I said, I'm going to nurse. And she said, I don't approve of nurses. They're no better than they should be. My girls, very like Jean Brodie, go into the civil service. They go to university or they teach. Nothing else.
Oh.
Which, you know, was really, really bad.
Especially at that age, when you're so improved.
But I was a pretty stroppy sort of person, I think. Well, I must have been, otherwise, you know, somebody would have flattened me. And I wasn't flattened, yes.
So how did you meet your husband?
Oh, well, yes. I went to London and I nursed. Then
which hospital, sorry?
Westminster Hospital.
Westminster.
Yes. And I qualified there. And then my father was sent to Malta, and my sister was away, and my mother wouldn't go to Malta. So I went home for a year while he was away, because my sister then decided she'd go nursing and she would go to Westminster. So I went home to look after Mum, really. And I worked at All Saints Hospital in Chatham, because he'd been a Chatham dockyard as well. He did all the dockyards. And then I was engaged and I was jilted, and so I decided I'd go and do midwifery. And the only place that would take me immediately was Thomas's. So I went there and I met Michael at a party there. I thought, in fact, he was a husband, and he was very calm, and he was sort of sitting there reading a newspaper at the hospital. And I said to a friend, you know, look at that chap, his wife's having a baby and he's just sitting there. And she said, well, I hope he's not, because he's taking me out to dinner. And then when her set left, they invited all the men they could think of, because obviously we had far too many girls, and Michael was one of them. And it turned out that he'd gone to school with my cousin, and I knew his friends from Wimbledon College. He was a Catholic. And we went out for 6 weeks and decided it was all absolutely hopeless. We weren't going anywhere. And then 2.5 years later, he rang me up and we got married.
Well, wonderful.
Yes, but by then I was back at Westminster, and I was the deputy theatre superintendent, and I'd got a car, and I had to think, well, I'm going to have to give up my car and my job. Yeah.
I had a similar thing with my wife, who worked at Barnes. So
oh, right, yes.
The sort of social connection.
That's right, yes. Well, every set that left had a party, you know, and they invited everybody then. And I was told I could have Michael Quinlan because he's a Catholic.
Yes. And tell us a little bit about Michael's. We've seen his a little bit about his career.
Oh, right, yes, yes. Well, he was private secretary to Sam Elworthy at the time, and Sam Elworthy was the chief of air staff when we got married. And so I was sort of thrown back into the services, which was really quite interesting because I did know an awful lot about the Navy and quite a lot about the Army, but not much about the RAF. And then after 5 years, we were posted to NATO in Brussels. And so we had 3 years out there. So again, there was a lot more connection with the services. But he went on to be permanent secretary in the Ministry of Defence.
Yes.
And his speciality was nuclear weapons.
Yes. He was seen very much as the architect of UK's sort of nuclear policy.
Yes.
Very much a strategist, wasn't he?
Yes. And some people called him the white old Jesuit when it came to that. And yes, he was a very clever man, actually, and very interesting. And again, I suppose I didn't ask enough questions. I knew an awful lot, but, you know, nowadays, now that he's gone, you think, oh, why didn't I ask him about that? But I have emails at the moment from all sorts of people saying, what do you think Michael would have done about Syria? You know, what would he have said?
Yes, interesting. Is anyone sort of researching his life or writing about him?
Well, I've got a book of his letters, which we put together. I can show you.
Okay. Just turn off for 2 seconds, shall I?
Press that.
Not sure it helps you very much. But anyway,
well,
Michael was president of the Civil Service Sports Association, and the first time we went out to Jib was when he went to open a sports centre up near South Barracks. And I wasn't invited, but I paid for myself, because no way was I going to let him go to Gibraltar without me.
Without
you can imagine. Yeah. So that was great fun. And we stayed at the convent. But it was rather amusing because the press got hold of the fact that Sir Michael had come out to do this, but his wife was educated by the nuns. So actually, he followed me round. It was not his visit at all, it was mine, and it was huge fun.
Was this the first time you'd been back?
No, I'd been back before. I took one of my daughters out to Jib and said, you know, this is a British colony. And she said, you have to be joking. It's so Spanish. It just isn't true. But the other children haven't been out.
Okay.
Just Carrie. No. But it was an amusing visit,
and
really.
How did Michael like Gibraltar? First impression?
Well, he was asked if he would like to be considered to be governor. And John Chappell went, in fact. And I thought that would be huge fun. But actually, when I thought about it, I don't know whether you should record this or not. Mm. I just wondered how many of my friends from school would be married to people who were, in a sense, legitimate.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot goes on in Gibraltar, which is perfectly okay, but I'm sure there are lots of other things that go on. And it would have been difficult to invite people to the convent and not invite others.
Yes.
That sort of thing. Anyway, it wouldn't have suited him because he's not a bird watcher, which John Chappell is, so that suited him very nicely. But Michael would have been backwards and forwards about his nuclear weapons. He'd have been on the plane half the time, so
yes. It
wouldn't have been a good idea.
I mean,
idea.
He was... So his legacy is really as a really major defence strategist and nuclear policy.
Yes,
And
yes.
Even now he's looked upon as... he was an authoritative figure on that.
Yes. His correspondence.
Mm.
We did this with the Institute of Strategic Studies.
Oh, right. Oh, how interesting.
And it is very interesting. But I find it difficult to read because it's so much... He writes in such a special way that I can hear him and I haven't still quite got...
Oh, because you can... Yes, it's funny,
yes,
isn't it?
It is. But he brought out a book with Charles Guthrie on just war.
Mm.
And then he brought out nuclear weapons.
How interesting.
Yes.
And what about the sort of anti-nuclear lobby? Did he have a lot of trouble with them?
Well,
I mean, he
lectured quite a lot and talked quite a lot. He went to Israel, and he was asked to talk in Israel and got hissed, which he was rather proud about. And he used to talk sometimes at St. James in Piccadilly, and there was always a sort of anti-nuclear women's lib type people in the background. They were always difficult. But he was invited to talk to the... military college in Moscow. You know, so he was very good at it, and even in obituaries, people said, you know, how he could always see other people's point of view, even if he didn't agree with it, and he didn't make.
Well, that's what he said. Yes, he wasn't dogmatic at all.
No,
he just.
But he didn't. Yes. He didn't make people feel inferior. Mm. He had a habit, which was extremely annoying if you were married to him, of telling you what you should be doing, and making you realise that actually you should have thought of that in the first place. That was really annoying. You know, if you said to him, you know, what am I going to do about so-and-so, he'd say this. And then I'd sort of think about it for 24 hours and then realise that actually, yes, that was
the most logical and
straightforward
thing in the world.
Yes, that's...
And what about, I mean, it, obviously, to both of you, you're, or may not be obviously at all, but I can ask you as a question, I mean, was your faith important to both of you?
Oh, yes, and it was very important to him. And he was chairman of the Tablet Trust. Do you know the
Tablet
magazine?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Oh, you probably looked him up, didn't you? But, no, his faith was extremely important, and that's one of the nice things in that you could talk about nuclear weapons and things and still have faith.
Mm.
And he was very friendly with Leonard Cheshire.
Right.
Oh, and
yes.
Leonard Cheshire was the observer on when they dropped the bomb. And, you know, to his dying day, he thought it was the thing to do, which was interesting. We knew him really very well. He used to come, you know, to dinner and things like that. And his faith was very strong, and he always thought that it was the right thing to do.
And it's really interesting when, you know, I'm a Catholic, and you get this, people can be quite clear on certain things which may be certain big issues, but behind them they get their confidence from, whether you're Jewish or Protestant or whatever, from their faith. And the impression I got that Michael got a similar thing.
Yes.
To be able to sort of be confident in the defence strategy type stuff, he had a good faith to back him up.
That's right. We had we've been having lectures in his memory, and we had a lecture from Shirley Williams this year. I've yet to have her text, because sometimes when you're trying to make sure everybody's all right and say hello to various people, you don't actually concentrate as well as you should. And it would be interesting to know how he would react now to drones, because drones are, in a sense, a new thing, and much more common. And she was talking about weapons being taken over by drones, so that would be an interesting thing.
And this is Memorial Lecture at Oxford each year, isn't
it? No,
it's
in London.
Is it in London?
Yes, yes. We're going to have Gus O'Donnell next year, and he'll talk in the Treasury.
He was Cabinet Secretary.
That's right, yes, yes. And Peter Hennessy did the first one, and Joe Nye, who's head of the Kennedy School at Harvard.
And Mary, I can't see you just sitting back as a little wife. So in your husband's sort of high-level career, what was yours?
While we were married or before?
While
we were married. Well, we had four children, and he was away a lot. But I went back to nursing, back to the operating theatre, when my last child went to school. But I fundraised a lot. I fundraised and helped build a hospice in St. Raphael's. I worked in it as a volunteer, and I worked in St. Anthony's Hospital, which is in the same grounds. What else did I do? I was a trustee of women's charity in Northern Ireland, the Women Caring Trust, which brought both religions together, and I did that
during
for quite a long time. Yes, that was difficult, because if I went to Northern Ireland, the army were very wary of me going to Northern Ireland, and so I had to have a driver and the young man with a gun underneath his seat, and when Michael and I went over, we had to travel in separate helicopters, that sort of thing. So I actually said, enough's enough, I'm not doing this, because I feel I'm putting people's lives at risk, and that's nonsense, you know. So I won't go until Michael retires. When Michael retired, he went to Ditchley. Have you seen that? It's a conference centre over near Woodstock, and he ran that, an international conference centre. So I was very involved in that. You know, I did menus and the staff and visitors and all sorts. So it was a bit like running a hospital again.
Yes.
In a way, you know. And people would say, well, I can come, but I've got this problem. And so I would dress fingers or monitor various people. But mostly they were friends and they knew that I would look after them if they weren't well. I'm a guide at Broughton Castle. I belong to NADFAS and we do heritage volunteers and repair fabrics and things, which is one of the things I'm interested in Gibraltar, because Gibraltar have the banners in the King's Chapel and they need repair. And I haven't been able to go to Gibraltar for the last 2 years. My sister and her husband and her son all died last year. And I gave up the year just to be around for them. But the banners need attention. And I'm told that they've got an estimate from the Royal College of Needlework. And it doesn't sound as if it's enough money. The Royal College is very expensive, like £30 an hour. And to bring it home, bring the banners over and all that sort of thing. I rather feel that there are a lot of people in Gibraltar who could probably do it themselves. The and people who went to Madeira during the war, they came back able to embroider beautifully. You know, so there's
and again, it's quite a sort of Spanish
thing. It's a Spanish thing.
Absolutely,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would imagine it would be really nice to have it done there.
So I rather hope to go out in June and see if I can't sort of.
And I know the Friends of Gibraltar are concerned about some of the colours.
Yes.
Because they go beyond a certain amount of stage where they can't be repaired, and they put that sort of netting around it.
Yes. But
that
I mean,
flakes as well.
Well, yes, and also it can flake inside the net.
Yes. And some people, then the military say, well, if it gets beyond, you know, proper repair, it has to be destroyed according to military tradition.
Oh, right.
Can I just ask you to, for the tape, to explain what the banners are, what they are?
Well, I believe I haven't investigated them particularly, because it's all at meetings that I've been to that I hear all this. The banners hang in the chapel, and they are the colours, I think, from various regiments that have served on the Rock. So they go back a long way, and some of them are really very old and rather decrepit. But I feel I would like to look into them a bit, because at the moment we're conserving an altar frontal, which dates from 1600. So, you know, we're getting used to doing these things. And I do sort of slightly wonder whether it would be something if I took a couple of the team out there, if they were paid for, you know, because not everybody can afford to do this, and we could work on them, or whether I could bring them back, I don't know. But it does seem to me that something needs to be done fairly soon.
Outside of this, let's have a discussion, because the Friends are trying to do it through the Royal Gibraltar Regiment, and there's a person there that's in.
Oh, is there?
So maybe I can make contact.
Yes, because they have. NADFAS is now in Gibraltar. And I did actually write to them before I went out 2 years ago and say, you know, perhaps I can come and see you. And they said, oh, we haven't got a meeting. We finished for the summer, which was May, which seemed a bit early, really. But I do feel that there's talent out there. And
it would be good to get together, wouldn't it, to do that?
Yes.
But this all suggests that you're continuing contact and involvement in Gibraltar.
I'm not as... I haven't got as much contact as I would like. When I went out last time, some of my friends, Shirley Callahan, I don't know if she might be worth talking to. She and her husband own the Kalita Palace. And she was Shirley Bassadoni in my day. Mm. And her father was great. And he built the Kalita Palace, and she said, you know, Daddy, he only built it with spare money. He wouldn't take out a mortgage. So they built when they had money, and they didn't build when they didn't have money. You know, that sort of thing. He was a great character. I liked him very much. And they had a fantastic black and white bathroom, when a lot of people in Gibraltar at that stage didn't have bathrooms. You know, they weren't that wealthy. And Valerie Malin, who is Valerie Gaggiero and lives in Sotto Grande, so does Shirley. Her husband is a part owner of the Rock Hotel and things
like
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we've probably nearly got enough, actually. Yes. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you one last... Oh, you have, actually.
It's really? Been lots.
Been great. But I just wanted to ask you a sort of final question, really, which is just to the, when you think about Gibraltar now, and you think about, you know, it's a long time ago, but then you've been back again. Mm. What's your sort of image of Gibraltar?
Well, it's home, because they were such formative years that when I walk down Main Street, which is really quite scruffy and dirty, isn't it? I think, you know, well, I'm home.